still want what I have. Seal has me thinking a lot about my own life as well as his. Mine seems ultra-calculating these days. It gets really complicated. You get pulled in a lot of directions. I know it sounds cliche, but the journey really is more important than the destination. Once you get where you're going, most of the magic drains out. I could really see myself as a minimalist, just taking life wherever it leads me. I like my walks with Seal in the morning. 2 o'clock p.m. I throw 2 Morningstar veggie burgers in the microwave and cut up some raw carrots as a side for lunch. Seal is in his room on the phone. I'm not sure who he's talking to, but he's being intentionally quiet. Before he can hang up, I have already inhaled both the veggie burgers. I throw 2 more into the microwave. You're done, Seal says. Time. We head down to the gym and start our second workout of the day with an interval run on the treadmill. I grab a towel and leave it on the handrail of the treadmill because I know I'm going to need it. Walk 5 minutes at a 12 incline, 3.5 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 6.2 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 8.7 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 6.3 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 8.8 speed. I grab the towel and wipe off my forehead. I'm starting to drip. My sweat's landing on the treadmill and making each stride super slippery. I'm convinced I'm going to fly off like George Jetson did when I start sprinting. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 6.4 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 8.9 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 6.5 speed. 2 minutes and 30 seconds at 9.0 speed. 5 minutes walk slash cool down. 1 to 30 push-ups. Time, 41 minutes. Halfway through the run, I start to feel like my morning stars may come up. I'm cramping a bit, but figure I can run through it. As the cramp moves from the side of my stomach to the center, I think it may be gas. I push. It is gas. I push a bit harder and a loud blast out of my ass. It's like a thundercloud has burst out of me. Seal looks at me and says, in the same exact pitch as my fart. I keep running but start laughing hysterically on the treadmill. Seal is standing there just staring at my pace on the electronic dashboard of the machine. No smile, no laugh. 90 minutes later, around 3 p.m. I want to pick up some gifts at Barney's, a fancy department store on Madison Avenue, for Sarah and Laser as the holidays are coming up soon. Seal comes with me because Seal comes everywhere with me. Seal suggests we run there, but I tell him I don't want to be sweating while we're shopping. Well, we can run home then, he says. But we'll have all the shopping bags and stuff, I say. Fuck it, let's run there, he says. So we run cross town to Barney's. Since I know we're going to be holiday shopping on the Upper East Side of New York, I want to look somewhat respectable. So I'm running in the nicest running outfit I have. I'm holding my credit card in my hand and a $20 bill in case we need to cab it back. By the time we get into the store, I've got a nice sweat going. Seal looks like he took a cab there. He's unblemished. I say to Seal, let's make this fast. Let's just go to the jewelry section. My wife certainly doesn't need anything, but she definitely needs to see the effort. If there's one thing I've learned about marriage, it's not the gift that counts, it's the effort. That's kind of like Seal, I guess. As we look at the jewelry in the glass case, I ask Seal what he likes. Man, this shit doesn't make any sense to me. Who would want a gold snake on the wrist for a few weeks' salary? He has another point. I mean, you work 120 hours and you go buy a bracelet? Shit's crazy to me. And another point. I pick up a few items, effort, and ask the sales clerk to wrap them and throw the gifts in a bag. I have the $20 in my hand, but obviously, we run home. Straight cross town with a Barney's bag hanging from one arm. Bonus miles. Again, crazy. 2 grown men running through Manhattan holding a Barney's bag. Workout totals, 3 miles, 25 minutes of intervals on treadmill, 465 push-ups, 50 sit-ups, 50 flutter kicks, and Seal circuit. Dumbbell bench presses, seated rows, military press, try pull downs, curls. Day 18. The difference 5 minutes can make. Don't get too comfortable, ever. Seal. New York City, 21 degrees, 0700. Miracle of miracles. We take the morning off. Hey, Laser, I say to him in his high chair, what do you think if Daddy stays home from work this morning to play? Laser's smile lights up the room. First, we start with the action figures, and then we get into some serious block building. I haven't thought about anything other than how to build a higher tower in hours. Should we knock it down? I ask Laser. And before the grin on his face is fully formed, the tower of blocks comes crashing down. Let's build it again, I say. 11:45. Seal walks in. He reminds me that it's almost noon and I have a 12:30 p.m. meeting today with the Zico sales team. I kiss my son on the forehead with a big smooch and head out the door with Seal. I've got on a winter coat and my Knicks knit hat. Seal has a t-shirt and jeans on. His shoulders are angled up into his neck as we walk to work and his hands are in his pockets. He must be cold. This is unusual for him. I've never seen his body look like this before. We're on a direct walking path to my office today, which is also unusual. Sarah convinced Seal the weighted vests were a bad idea, so we look like civilians today. I guess Seal doesn't think there are any imminent issues en route. Or maybe he feels the urge to change our pattern so we're less likely to be detected. Whatever the case, it's a normal person's commute, a direct shot. As we hit the corner of 57th and Broadway, we wait for the walk sign. You ever worry about all these meetings you take? Like, what if the direction isn't going the way you want it to go? Never let them boo you, I say. One of Seal's eyebrows arches. No matter what, you can never let them boo you. You have to control the situation. His shoulders immediately drop down into a normal position and he asks, what do you mean? Can I tell you a story, I ask? The walk sign illuminates. Sure, just as long as it's not about a big red chicken, he says. Okay, well, after my video debuted on Yo MTV Raps, I went on tour to support my CD. My first single, Shake It Like a White Girl, was starting to get national radio play. While I was on the road, I got a call from Mike Ross. A promoter had reached out and asked if I would perform at the Increase the Peace charity benefit in Atlanta. Apparently, the promoter was getting African-American artists and Caucasian artists to come together and play one big benefit show. Some of the biggest acts were confirmed. I guess some Vanilla Ice was booked that day because they called me as the Caucasian representative. The show was at the Georgia Dome in downtown Atlanta, and they bussed in about 25,000 kids from all over Atlanta to attend. I'd known the crowd was going to be tough, but they were worse than I'd anticipated. The kids were unruly. There were fights in the stands. They were throwing shit at the stage. They had to keep putting the house lights on to control the audience. And they booed everyone. I mean everyone. It was insane. Shortly before I was supposed to go on stage, LL Cool J was on. They had to move up his star time because he had another gig later that night and he had to fly out. The fans in Atlanta, they booed LL. I was like, if this crowd is booing LL, I'm in big trouble. Real big trouble. They're booing LL and I'm supposed to go up and sing my song, Shake It Like a White Girl? I couldn't figure out how I was going to get out of this thing. I did not want to go on. I was physically sick. When the MC of the event introduced me, it was even worse. Ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Los Angeles, California, give it up for my main man, Jesse James. Silence. Radio silence. I could see the whites of the eyes of the fans in the first row. They were pissed. I don't know at what, but they were pissed. Before the crowd could even get the B in boo out of their mouth, I came up with a crazy idea. My label had given me some free t-shirts to give away. I grabbed the cordless mic from the sound man backstage, but also grabbed a pile of 100 or so t-shirts and took them out with me on stage. Atlanta, Georgia, do you want some free shit? I yelled to the crowd. Yeah, they screamed back. Y'all want some t-shirts in the back section? Yeah, to my left. Yeah, I kept throwing out t-shirts until they were all gone. Then, before anyone could even react, I said, "Good night, Atlanta. Love you guys and enjoy the show. Color Me Bad is on next." And then I walked off the stage. Didn't sing a word, but I didn't get booed either. Remember when you told me to control my mind the first day you moved in with me? Well, I'm telling you, in business, control the situation. Yo, Jesse, man, motherfucking Jesse, you see? That's what I'm talking about, motherfucker. That's what I'm talking about, Seal says as we get to the entrance of my office building. 1300. When we get up to my office, I ask Seal if I can have some privacy for a moment. Usually, he sits on the couch and watches me type emails during the day, but this afternoon, I want to be alone. I want to just sit in my chair and think. So, Seal pulls up a chair and places it right in front of my office and closes the door. He sits in front of it like he's guarding the Royal Palace in London. If anyone has to ask me a question about Zico, well, they'll have to get past Seal first. The fact that we took the morning off makes me feel like I'm on a week's vacation. I recline on my chair and start to think about all that's happened with Seal. I'm reliving the past days in my mind when I'm out, like saliva drooling out of the side of my mouth, asleep. 3 hours later, Seal comes in and wakes me up. "Let's get out of here," he says. 7 o'clock p.m. As Seal and I walk into my building's gym that evening, my 24-year-old nephew, Yoni, is leaving. He uses the building gym often, and I run into him like this from time to time. It's always nice to see him. Typically, it's a slap of the hand, a hug, and a quick catch-up. How's laser and how's work? Yoni's in amazing shape. When he moved to New York from Florida 18 months ago, he weighed 240 pounds. I don't know if it was the New York women or what, but something clicked in his brain and he decided to get in shape. He's now about 170 pounds and ripped. He's run several marathons and is a workout junkie. "Come on, Yoni, join us," Seal says. "We're doing push-ups." "I wish. I already ran this morning and swam just now, but thanks." Seal whispers something in my nephew's ear. No idea what he says, but the expression on Yoni's face goes from happy-go-lucky to furrowed and pasty. Whatever Seal said, it manipulated my nephew. He decides to join us. "This is what we're going to do," Seal says. 12 push-ups every 45 seconds for 22 minutes. Then 15 pull-ups, 2-minute rest. Then 20 push-ups, 3 pull-ups, 5 sets, then 100 flutter kicks. "I should have left 5 minutes earlier," Yoni whispers. After working out, we all grab a quick bite at the restaurant in our building. It's a bit fancy, but we grab a table in the back and order some light appetizers. The conversation is centered on Yoni and how far he's come with his training. It escalates. Seal somehow convinces Yoni that he should quit his bullshit job running social media for a big hotel chain and join the Navy. And my cockamamie nephew is bought into it. It escalates even further. Now, Seal is convincing him he can pass the Navy SEAL training and become a SEAL. He's going over the requirements and the basic fit test. It escalates even further. "Fuck this. Let's start this shit right now." These two knuckleheads decide to head out for a run. I go upstairs and about 90 minutes later, Seal returns to the apartment. "Where's Yoni?" "Not sure. He fell back about 100 meters at mile 4. 90 minutes later, Yoni walks into the apartment. He looks like a pile of split fuck. He has vomit on his fleece and he's super pale. He looks dehydrated. "I think I'm more of a social media guy," he says. Workout totals: 364 push-ups, 30 pull-ups, 100 flutter kicks. Day 19. My shoulders. You can always keep going. Seal. New York City, 28 degrees, 0700. We head out to the loop around Central Park. I really want to stay in bed and watch the beginning of the Today Show with Sarah, but I'm in a great rhythm with Seal and don't want to let up. Plus, there's only about a week or so left of his time with me. Today's goal sounds simple. 6.1 miles at sub-8-minute mile pace with no mile over 8 minutes. Before I'm halfway through the run, though, My shoulders feel like I'm giving the rapper Fat Joe a piggyback ride. The pain is ridiculous. That's what thousands of push-ups in 10 days will do. I literally, no BS, can't swing my arms as I run because my shoulders hurt so badly. So I run the last 3 or so miles with my arms flailing. I look like the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. The slowest mile in the first 5 is 7 minutes and 45 seconds. The last one is 8 minutes and 8 seconds. Seal looks at me like I left him on the battlefield. 4 hours later. I have a meeting with the brass of a major hotel chain. I'm not really sure what the meeting is about, but my friend Kirk Posmator set it up because he thought I could help the chain. Kirk owns a company called Access Luxury and Lifestyle, and he's the king of connecting dots. If Kirk says it's worth a meeting and exploring, then it's worth a meeting and exploring. I ask Seal to join. There's no need to change, mostly because Seal has nothing to change into. Rather, we throw on our ridiculous-looking weight vests, Seal is again insisting on us wearing them, and we head to the meeting from the apartment. When we arrive, we're greeted by Kirk and 4 other guys in suits. They look a lot smarter than me. I'm definitely not prepared for the meeting. In fact, I'm a bit nervous. Nice vest, Kirk says. Oh, this old thing, I laugh. I just threw it on. They're so confused. I immediately introduce Seal and explain that he's living with me for a month and tailing my every move. Wait, like a Navy SEAL, Seal? The Brooks Brother guy asks. What kind of training? The Prada suit dude asks. Like, lives in your house? The sweater vest pipes in before I can answer any of the questions. All these guys want to do is talk about our workouts and why I hired Seal. These guys are looking at me like I just invented the internet. They're blown away. It's like when a stock on the New York Stock Exchange is halted and no business can be conducted. They're obsessed with our dynamic. They keep asking questions. 2 hours pass and it's a question and answer frenzy. At the end of the meeting, they say to me, if you have any ideas for us, let us know. We want to do something with you. It's like Seal's a secret weapon. He's the best closer. I'm slowly realizing how appealing Seal is to others. Men in suits are fascinated by a guy like Seal. His work ethic, his workouts, his history. So, indirectly, they're becoming more interested in me. 1900. Tonight is my company's holiday party. And of course, Seal's invited. I'm not sure if he wants to go, but he's coming. He deserves to be here. I mean, his mere presence practically signed Kevin Garnett for us. We all have a lot to celebrate. It's been a great year. The party's a low-key dinner and all 12 employees attend. I'm worried a bit about how Seal will interact in a social setting. I mean, there's a good chance he'll sit there and not say a word. He can be like a sphinx. When he comes to work with me every day, he never talks to anyone, ever. Never logs onto a computer, never reads a paper. He just sits there until it's time to go. It's like having a piece of artwork in my office. I know he's trained to go off the grid, but it's wild. Not only to me, but to everyone I work with. Seal once told me that when he came back from a mission, when everyone would sit around and smoke and decompress, he'd go running. After a 24-hour mission, he would work out. Well, as it turns out, I don't have to worry about Seal interacting with anyone tonight because he's on a food mission. I realize Seal's eating habits are more complicated than I originally thought. For 2 weeks, he hardly ate at all except for his military-grade shakes. But at dinner this evening, he eats like a wood chipper. Steak, fish, fruits, vegetables, you name it. It goes down the hatch. Everything except dessert. Why would I want to waste the calories, he says. My employees seem a little looser than they usually are during the workday. Maybe it's the cocktails. They're all obsessed with Seal. They ask him a million questions and get one-word answers back. They're intimidated and intrigued. It's like everyone wants to sit next to him, but nobody wants to sit next to him. Most of the people at the party have been following the blog, so they know what to ask, but are afraid to ask it. Excuse me, do you mind telling me what you think has been the hardest workout so far? Sorry to bother you, but can you explain what 1 to 18 is? If you don't mind, would you tell me the Boston story? My employees are asking questions like we're in a conference room with a new potential client pitching us a product. It keeps going, and he keeps eating. When all is said and done, Seal's food intake constitutes 75% of the dinner bill for the night. Amazing. On another note, we're serving sake at the party. I like sake. I do a shot, then another, and another, all the way to 8, well, maybe 9. It's on. First drinks in 18 days. Best I've felt in 18 days. Seal's totally cool with it. He's letting me do my thing and enjoying his whole pass as well. The euphoria doesn't last. When we get home, I definitely need to sleep. I was up at 6 a.m., worked out, had an 11-hour workday followed by the party and all the alcohol. I'm toast. I can't wait to go to bed. My body and brain are both in agreement. The day should be over, but my gut tells me it isn't. It's sort of like when you're in third grade and look out at the 1 inch of snow that fell overnight. You hope school will be canceled, but you know better. So regardless of what my brain and body are rooting for, I make my way to my bedroom to get my shorts and sneakers. Seal smiles. You know we gotta do it, right? Yes. I'm buzzed. And doing push-ups when you're buzzed is a whole different kind of thing. I actually think it may be easier at first. The first ones are funny. It's like you don't really know you're doing them. With all the alcohol and the up-and-down push-up movement mixing to form a more intense buzz. But as you move on, that buzz turns to a I'm fucked feeling. I fight through the fucked feeling and we do 10 push-ups on the minute for 20 minutes. That's another 200 down. It's easy to write 200 on paper, but it's another thing to do them. I have no idea how many push-ups the average 40-plus man can do, but I'm guessing around 20 at one shot. Doing 200 is a big number. It's not easy. I get into my bed and throw SportsCenter on. I'm fucked up. Workout totals, 6 miles, sub 8-minute mile pace, and 200 push-ups. Day 20. Start when the second hand hits. If you're hungry, run faster. You'll be home quicker. Seal. New York City, 32 degrees, 0600. I get out of bed and head into the kitchen. It's pitch dark outside and cloudy. It looks brutally cold, but the thermometer says 32 degrees. I look out of my window onto Columbus Circle, and there's nobody outside. It looks like an old barren movie set. Seal is already in the kitchen, sitting on a stool at our island, just sitting. We're going to focus on the basics this morning, push-ups and sit-ups. It all starts with the basics, Seal says. It's true. My time with Seal has convinced me the days of the fancy gym memberships are numbered. Things like CrossFit and street workouts are going to prevail in the future. All you really need to do is get your push-ups and sit-up routine consistent, and you can see amazing results. I have another philosophy. You can be fit without being healthy, but you can't be healthy without being fit. Meaning, you can be in great shape on the outside, but if you don't eat great and don't take care of your insides, you aren't necessarily healthy. History shows us there were plenty of athletes who were in great shape but suddenly died of a heart attack. Balance is key. I also believe being in really good shape takes a combination of many components. For starters, you have to be strong, but you also have to be explosive, flexible, capable of running stop-and-go sprints and running long distances. You need the full package. So, back to basics. I do 10 push-ups followed by as many sit-ups as I can until the second hand on the clock hits 12 again. Then I start the push-ups and sit-ups again. We repeat that for 30 minutes non-stop. By the end of the workout, my core muscles, chest and triceps are cooked. Plus, my heart rate is up in the mid-150s. The full package. 1300. My friend Brian Freed comes over to hang out for a few hours. I've known Freed for a long time, and he's part of my Wonderful Wednesday group. 6 friends who run together every Wednesday, hence the name. He's also a professional cyclist and in great shape. I think Seal is in his room, but I told him I had a friend coming over, so I assume he'll come out and say hi. This beats your first apartment, Brian says, getting comfortable on my couch. It does, I say, but there was some charm to that place. When did you live there? 93? Yeah. It was on 60th between 1st and York. This was long before they renovated the 59th Street Bridge area. It was actually the mecca of transvestite prostitution. Every night, coming home from the bars was an adventure. The first week living there, I didn't even make eye contact. It only took a week or two for all the prostitutes to know that Spit, my roommate, and I weren't looking for dates. Well, I should say, we weren't looking for those kind of dates. In no time, we coexisted, but the crib wasn't exactly the Ritz-Carlton. We had to walk up 162 steps to get to our 150-square-foot apartment. The kitchen and bathroom were one room. There was no bedroom. I slept in a loft space with a 6-foot ceiling. I couldn't sit up in bed and had to walk up these little steps to get to my mattress. I'd roll just to get into bed. And looking back, I had absolutely the best time living there. It was like sleeping on a ship. I paid $350 and Spit paid $417 a month. We lived there for 2 years. My office then was the apartment living room. I'd bought a television and it came in a huge cardboard box. So I flipped the box upside down and that was my desk. It took up half the apartment. I write all the phone numbers, dates, appointments on the box. The only rule in the apartment was you couldn't drink on my desk. That box was my whole life. I had it forever. It was so organized. I knew where everyone's phone number was. I knew every appointment. I loved living as a struggling artist. My mindset was a creative eat what you kill. I was enjoying the fact that I was even in this position. I worked all day hitting the phone or studio if I had a job, and then at night, I was hitting the bars. Just as Brian and I are getting situated on the couch, laughing and talking, Seal walks in the room to shake Brian's hand. I think Seal wants to show off his work on me to date, as he says, "Let's knock out a quick 5-minute round of push-ups." Freed and I agree. Seal pulls out his watch and we begin. We do 10 push-ups on the 30-second dial. By the time we're 3 minutes into it, Freed is down to 7. I keep pace. 5 minutes pass and we're done. I'm able to do them all. Freed is cooked. Seal is proud of his student. 2100. Seal pulls me off the couch where I'm comfortably watching ESPN. "Let's do a cool down," are his exact words. To Seal, a cool down is an 8-mile run. To me, a cool down is the last thing I want to do. I put on all my shit and give Sarah a kiss. Although we've been doing this for weeks, she can tell I'm tired and have already had multiple workouts today. She can tell I'm pissed. "Honey, this is really ridiculous. You're overdoing it." We run through Central Park, into Harlem, up around 125th Street, and start to head back. There are 3 specific highlights from the run. 1. 3 miles into the run, I ask Seal if he has $2, the only words we have said to each other all run. He says, "For what?" I respond, "I haven't eaten all day. I need an energy bar or a banana." He says, "We have 5 miles left. If you're hungry, run faster. You'll be home quicker." 2. Seal hears a dog nearby in the woods while we're running. I didn't hear a thing, but apparently Seal has extrasensory hearing. Seal says under his breath to himself, to the invisible dog, "Try me, motherfucker. I mean it. Try me." Let me be perfectly honest. He said it in a way where it sounded like he wanted the dog to attack him. The dog was smart. We never saw him. 3. There are millions of people in New York City, literally millions. Yet tonight, we only saw one other person running in all of Central Park. We're home at 10:25 p.m. At the doorstep to our building, Seal says to me, "It's not what you do. It's when and how you do it. It's all about the conditions. Remember that." 10 minutes later, we have to hustle because we need to get to the airport and go down to Atlanta for a lightning quick trip. Sarah has a meeting in the morning and has asked us to keep her company. I want to stay in New York City and work, but Seal reminds me, "You're not in control here, bro." And he's right. If my wife wants to roll to Atlanta, we roll to Atlanta. So we fly out at midnight. The plan is to go there and fly back in just 24 hours. Workout totals: 8 miles, 400 push-ups, and 550 sit-ups. White van. I can sit still for hours, waiting. Seal. The next morning, I see Seal sitting absolutely still on the windowsill of our Atlanta house. The sun is still coming up. He's staring out at something. Maybe he's watching the sunrise, but I doubt it. He's dead silent. He doesn't even acknowledge me when I enter the kitchen. His eyes are locked onto the empty street outside, staring. I open the refrigerator and pour some juice into a glass. I intentionally make it noisy. No acknowledgement. Zero. He doesn't flinch. Staring. Everything cool? Not really, Seal says, staring. He pauses for a moment. He might see something. This shit is starting to get to me, like it's making me uncomfortable. Real uncomfortable. What? You telling me you haven't noticed? Seal asks, still staring. No. What? That white van, he says. I look outside. There's nothing. The street's empty, but it looks like it's going to be a nice day. Man, this van keeps driving by. It's like they're toying with me, bro. Like they're clowning me, Seal says. I look back out the kitchen window. I still don't see anything. Where? No, not now. Usually around 0200 when I'm on lookout, he says. Lookout? Yeah, lookout. Last time I was here at night, I was sitting outside monitoring, and the van creeped up. They were looking at the house. Fucking creepers. Seal continues to stare out the window. Not once does he look at me. I didn't get a read on the plate, he says, but I'm on to them. Seal ponders his thought. By the way, you need to install an infrared camera at the west side of the driveway adjacent to the mailbox. Immediately. It needs to be angled toward oncoming traffic. We can plan around it to make it blend in with the bush. I got a guy that can install ASAP. That way, we can't miss him. We've been breached, dude. Don't ignore this. Breached? You've seen the van, right? Actually, I haven't seen any cars in front of the house. Seal turns to me with a blank, cold, motionless face. He's pissed. Really pissed. It's a van, bro. It's not a car. It's a fucking van. The kind that looks like it's gonna do some shit it ain't supposed to be doing. Seal stares back out the window again, at nothing. Does the van think I'm some kind of fuckwad? I don't think I'm supposed to answer that question. I'm gonna camp out on this motherfucker, he says. Camp out? Fuck yeah. I'm gonna camp out and wait for his ass. Seal pounds his fist against the wall. At night? Not at night. Every night, he says. I'll be out there on a lawn chair every night till that joker pulls up again. Then I'm gonna blast a high beam light directly into his eyes and storm the vehicle. I'm gonna corner this fucker. I'm done playing defense. Seal pauses in thought, then says, the thing is, he probably has no idea I'm even playing defense right now. He probably thinking to himself, ho-hum, the Itzlers are asleep. But no ho-hum, the Itzlers are not asleep. The goblins are awake at the Itzlers' house, bro, he cackles. The goblins are wide awake. And still staring. Day 21. One rep at a time. I don't like to talk to strangers. Actually, I don't like to talk, period. Seal. New York City, 19 degrees, 0900. We're back in the city and we head out to do a modified loop in the park. Seal tells me we're going to run 10 miles today in reverse order, meaning 4 miles this morning and 6 miles at night. Usually we do a longer run in the morning and a cool down at night. Today, we do the first 4 miles at an 8-minute per mile pace. 4-mile runs are becoming easy breezy. I spend countless hours with Seal running by now, and we haven't spoken a word pounding the pavement for days. Complete radio silence when we run. Nothing ever said. Hey, Seal, what do you think about when you run? Finishing. And he does. It's like he's able to block out all the clutter in his head and the world, for that matter, and just focus on the task at hand. Say what you want, but the dude has mastered the art of being present. There's something really cool about that. As for me, I have a million things running through my brain. Sarah, laser, work, meetings, Zico and Coke, training, the pipes freezing, blah, blah, blah. It's like there's a 6-lane express highway running through my brain, and traffic's coming both ways. It's very hard for me to get my thoughts, worries, and ideas out of my mind. It's a bit overwhelming and stressful. However, with Seal around, I'm learning how to be more present. It's primarily because I have to. If I don't, there's no way I'll be able to finish the tasks at hand. I just go one step at a time, one rep at a time, and when I'm done, I worry about the next step or rep. I'm finding that there's some crossover to my life as well. Now I finish the first thing on my list with 100% focus and then attack the next. Thanks, Seal. 2030. After a light meal of plain pasta with nothing on it, sliced carrots, cucumbers, and a glass of water, it's time for the second half of our reverse run. I would prefer to wait about an hour for my food to digest, but Seal doesn't want to lose an hour of his life. So we go. As we ride the elevator down to the lobby of my building, I explain that I feel bloated. I like to run on an empty stomach and have a very hard time running with anything in me. That goes for races of any distance, including marathons. Pre-marathons, all I ever eat are bananas. So I ask Seal how he approaches nutrition during his long races. I need calories when I'm running that long. I've trained myself to be able to eat while I'm running. I can take in 600 to 1,000 calories an hour, no problem, but it takes getting used to. I hear the same thing from other ultra-marathon runners. They become capable of eating large amounts of food during their races. Dean Karnazes, a legendary runner who put ultra-marathoning on the map, is famous for eating pizza during some of his longer runs. He actually orders and has a delivery guy meet him on the course so he can get the pizza and eat it during the race. All that's good, but none of it's working for me as we start to run. I can feel the sustenance in my stomach bouncing. I'm belching every couple of strides. It's like the pasta, carrots, and cucumbers have set up a picket line in my belly and are protesting against one more step. We're not even at mile one yet, and I feel heavy and sick. Seal couldn't give three shits and keeps pace. In fact, I think he senses my discomfort and speeds the pace up a bit to make me feel even worse. At around mile four, I somehow figure out that if I breathe exclusively through my diaphragm, it feels a little better. I incorporate an unorthodox breathing style for the last 2 miles and make it home. It takes about an hour for my stomach to settle down, but the run is in the books. Another 10-mile day. Book it. Workout totals. 10 miles at 8 minute per mile pace. Days 22 and 23, night training. Be ready for anything at any time, Seal. New York City to Connecticut, 11 degrees to 9 degrees, 1400. It's the Christmas holiday. New York City is lit up and beautiful. If you've never been to New York during this time, it's really special. The streets are quiet and all the stores are shut down as people prepare to spend the day with loved ones celebrating. Our family, which now includes Seal, decides to head back up to Connecticut. I love the holidays, especially with all the winter elements. There's something in the air that just makes me feel festive. Regardless of religion or beliefs, for the most part, everyone's in the spirit of giving, even Seal. Seal and I head out for a quick 6-mile run in the mountains. It's a maintenance run at an 8 minutes and 30 second clip, meaning we're not getting better during this run, but we're not getting worse either. We're maintaining our shit, he tells me. When we get back home, I shower up and change. I meet Sarah in the family room. As she and I exchange some Hanukkah and Christmas gifts, Seal comes into the room holding something in his hands. He's protecting it like a fullback with a football near the goal line. Your boy's got an inner toughness, Seal says. I wanted to capture that in a gift. And he hands a present to Laser. I'm wondering, is it a toy truck? Blocks? Soccer ball? Nope. It's a miniature camouflage outfit complete with hat, real army fatigues, a unique gift for a 2-year-old. Sarah then gives Seal a present from us. She really wanted to. And right after he opens it, she asks him to try it on. He politely declines. Seal isn't big into receiving gifts. Most humans like gifts. Seal looks at gifts like they're clutter. She asks again and he respectfully says, later. By the third time, my wife is no longer asking. She's insisting. Even Seal doesn't dare mess with her. Seal goes into the bedroom to change, but now he doesn't want to come out. But after a minute or two, he reluctantly appears. Out walks Seal in a very nice casual dress shirt. Your standard light blue button down. It looks nice on him. but judging from Seal's expression, you'd think he's wearing a straitjacket. I hand Sarah the gifts that I got her the other day at Barney's. She can tell by the size of the box that it's jewelry. She opens it up and puts the necklace around her neck. I love it, sweetie, but what I really love is that you went out of your way for me. Love you. A for effort. 1900. It's frigid and snowy. The family's feeling good. We're all together. A typical late December in the Itzler household might be a fire in the fireplace, some blankets, and a movie once Laser goes to bed. I usually vote for something with a little bit of edge to it, but Sarah would lobby, and win, for a romantic comedy. It's bedtime, Sarah says to Laser. He's on the floor playing with Seal. They've got action heroes and matchbox cars and are saving the world. Somehow Seal has created a realistic village made up of blocks and tanks attacking from all directions. Seal's barking orders like it's a real-life raid. He's taking it way too seriously. But Laser? He's actually interested and looks like he's enjoying himself, which alarms me. 0200. It's 2 a.m. and snowing like crazy. The door to my bedroom is locked and I'm sleeping when I hear what sounds like someone trying to pick the lock of my door. The door handle's making noises like it's being pulled and tugged from the other side of the door. Then the sound I hear is like when a dog is scratching to get into the room while the handle's being pulled and tugged some more. I get out of my bed to check. I put my ear to the door to hear what's going on, but now I don't hear anything. Silence. So I bend down and get on all fours to look under the door crack to see if I see anything. Sure enough, I see Seal sneakers by the door. I stand up and pull open the door and Seal is standing right there. It's time, he says. Seal tells me the plan is to run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. 12 runs of 4 miles each every 4 hours. He calls it the 4-4-48. Are you kidding me? Well, apparently he's not. In fact, we're going to train for it by running 4.25 miles 4 times in 24 hours or 4 runs every 6 hours. I'm about to ask Seal his logic behind this, but instead I just say, are you kidding me? 0230. I open up my phone so I can get the light on it to shine, and then I use it as a flashlight. I don't want to put the bedroom lights on because that might wake up Sarah. She's been super cool about everything to date, but I'm not sure she would want me running in the snow at 2 a.m. in the mountains of Connecticut. I go to my closet and quickly open up my drawers to get my gear. I feel like I'm sleepwalking, but I know that's wishful thinking. I layer up, tiptoe out of the bedroom, and head downstairs to the front door. Seal is already outside. I'm wearing a thermal, a hoodie, a hat, 2 pairs of gloves, and thermal pants. Seal is in shorts, a hoodie, and gloves. It's freezing outside. Wet and freezing. We head out. Every step feels like I'm about to fall off the earth. It's pitch black. I mean pitch. 5 minutes into the run, Seal turns to me and says, rough road ahead, 20 meters. Now, how could he possibly know that? I can't see 1 meter in front of me. In fact, I'm not sure I even know what a meter is. I mastered military time, but I'm not up on the metric system. Anyway, apparently Seal's eyesight is not affected by darkness. It's like he has night vision without the night vision goggles. He sees fine. It's also bitter cold. My fingertips are completely numb. Seal runs like he's an anguilla. It's 80 degrees and sunny. Meanwhile, the snow hits my frozen face like BB gun pellets. I'm squinting to see and closing my eyes for 30 seconds at a clip to keep the snow from pounding into my eyeballs. I'm no longer in the holiday spirit. Soon we hit a patch of rough road. I say to myself, that must be how far 20 meters is. We move on. We run 4.5 miles in exactly 40 minutes. When we get home, we don't even turn the lights on. Our eyes are so adjusted to the dark that I can actually see fine in my pitch dark house. Apparently Seal's built-in night vision goggles have rubbed off on me. I strip naked and put all of my clothing in the dryer. My skin has red blotches all over from the cold and I'm freezing. I put on 2 sweatshirts and a ski hat and get into bed. Sarah is sound asleep next to me. Approximately 4 hours later. My phone alarm goes off. I got about 3 hours of sleep. I get my clothes out of the dryer. If only they were still warm. Seal is waiting at the front door. When we open the door, a bunch of snow falls into my foyer. It's 12 degrees outside. We head out. It's still as dark outside as when we got in from the last run, and it's still as cold and wet. It's like Groundhog Night. My muscles are super stiff from the cold and the mileage, and my feet hurt when they hit the hard, snowy pavement. We do the same run as before in 38 minutes. Brutal. 4 hours later. 19 degrees. It's run number 3 in our 24 hours of runs every 4 hours. The hardest part so far has been the process of exerting myself, cooling down, and then having to start again. The restart's a bitch. Seal throws me a bone and says if we do the loop in less than 38 minutes, we don't have to run again in 4 hours. That's a bone I like. Thus begins the great debate. Do we go out hard? The first mile is tough with big elevation. Or do we pace ourselves? Seal says, go hard. Let's go, I say. Out of 100 runs on this mountain course, my fastest first mile ever is exactly 9 minutes per mile. Trust me, this run is hilly. We do this one in 8 minutes and 7 seconds. We're flying. I'm gasping for air, literally. As we get to the top of the hill, 1.1 miles, I feel like I'm cramping. I keep going and it gets worse. I can't run. Stop the clock for a second. Something's off. Groin pull? It's so damn cold out, I can't officially diagnose myself until we get home. We walk the 1 mile back. The sweat pours off of me. I guess Seal was right. It is 80 and sunny. But with each step back, it feels like the temperature drops a degree. Then my body heat mixes with the cold and creates a thick, white vapor that rises from my skin. I'm a human chimney. After we get home and defrost, I confirm it. It is indeed my groin. I'm in abject pain. It's impossible to run. Push-ups instead, Seal says. We do 10 sets of 30, with a 1 minute break in between. Drops of ice start to fall off my face as I go down and start the push-up routine. Is this the hardest 48 hours you've ever had, Seal asks. Physically, yeah, I say. Then again, this is even harder than the Grand Hill shit. The basketball player? Yeah, I say. You train with him? No. Then what the fuck are you talking about? One time, Foot Locker hired me and my partner Kenny to do a national radio campaign. It was part of the work we were doing for our company, Alphabet City. We were up against some other agencies, but we won the account because I promised them I could get Grant Hill to be in the commercial. Hill had been the NBA's Rookie of the Year and was a bona fide rising superstar. He was a big get. They wanted him, and I promised we could get him. No problem, I said. But there was a problem. I didn't know Grant Hill. After we signed Foot Locker to do the campaign, I learned Grant was making an appearance at a Foot Locker in Manhattan. So my plan was to approach him right at the event. All I needed to do was get Hill to say something like, "Hi, this is Grant Hill, and I'm shopping at Foot Locker this holiday season." And then insert it into a radio spot. Then Foot Locker would give him a $500 gift certificate and I would be on my way. Easy, right? Except that I missed the event. I could go into a whole long explanation of what happened, but I'll save you the time. I just blew it. The next day, the CEO of Foot Locker called me and asked if I got Grant Hill, and I had to tell him no. "You got 48 hours, he said, or the deal's off." I immediately got the NBA schedule and found out the Orlando Magic, Grant Hill's team, was playing the Hawks that night. I went straight to LaGuardia and headed for Atlanta. I got to the arena at 10:30 in the morning, even though the game didn't tip off until 7:30 at night. It was so early that I was able to walk right into the arena. Some marching band was rehearsing, and nobody questioned me because I was with the band. I knew that players typically showed up at 5:30 for a 7:30 game, so I had a lot of time to kill. I just walked around like I knew what I was doing and just tried to look busy. Though it seemed like forever, eventually some of the Orlando Magic began to show up. I stood at a payphone and pretended to make a call as I waited for Grant. And then I saw my mark. I walked right up to him as he came through the player entrance. "Hey, Grant, it's Jesse from Foot Locker. I flew down and I'm here to get the audio clip I was supposed to get on Saturday," I said. You ready now?
What audio clip?
Right, the audio clip from the Foot Locker event?
Okay, well, let's talk about it after the game, he said, walking past me.
No, I said. I have to get it now and get back on the plane.
He kept walking into the locker room, so I leaned over and pulled his ear close to my mouth.
Grant, look into my eyes. I'm going to lose my job if I don't get this done. I cannot go home without this. I flew down here on my own dime today to get this. I don't know what it is, but they need it. The CEO sent me.
Maybe he saw the genuine fear in my eyes or heard it in my plea or whatever the case.
He obliged.
Okay, he said, follow me.
So I walked into the locker room with all the players goofing off and starting to get ready for the game. I pull out my handheld recorder and hand them a script. But it's too loud in the locker room, so I take him into the bathroom stall and close the door. I hand Grant the script again and push record.
Hey, this is Grant Hill, and this holiday season you can find me at Foot Locker. Foot Locker's got you covered.
Halfway through the third line, he said, who are you again, and what is this being used for?
Grant, I've been on the phone with your agent all day. This is part of the Foot Locker package you did. They're running a holiday promotion. I was just throwing words at him. It's the audio part. I was hoping he might pick up some buzzwords and think I actually was supposed to be there.
Okay, fine, he said, and finished it, and then I ran out.
As soon as I got out of the arena, I headed back to the airport and called Kenny from another payphone and played him the recording. The next day, it was on national radio.
That's some funny shit, Steele said without cracking a smile.
Do you want to hear about the big red chicken now?
No.
3 o'clock p.m. Steele takes me down to the gym to do some push-ups. Our Connecticut house has a gym on the bottom floor. Adjacent to the gym is a steam room and a sauna. It's like a mini training facility, and I love hanging out down there. I bought this house 7 years ago and gutted the entire place right after the closing. At the time, I was building Marquee Jet, and I wanted a place where I could entertain customers. One of the most important things I told the decorator was that I wanted a steam room that you never want to leave. Yeah, I picked out colors and approved floor plans, but I really only cared about the steam room. This gym and spa area are my personal retreat. We do 20 sets of 20 push-ups with a 1 minute break in between each set. Let me repeat, 20 sets of 20 push-ups. The first 10 are actually fairly easy, but the second half starts to get the better of me. I push my way through it and get to the final set. I'm jacked up sore.
Finish up. Get this shit done, fucker.
I do. I have to hold the plank position in between reps for about 20 seconds on each of the last 20 push-ups, but I get it done. That's 700 so far today, including the 300 we did earlier. Steele begs me to do 300 more to get to 1,000 push-ups. He begs me. I physically can't, I say.